The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. David Crosby, dead at the age of 81. That's going to be the most talked about story among people who are over 50. And if they're 75 or older, they're not going to stop talking about it forever. David Crosby, the soundtrack for their lives. Not a lot of young people know much about him. If they want to know a little bit about why he's such a controversial figure, Cameron Crowe made a great movie about him called Remember My Name, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago. And David Crosby described himself as a blank hole, and that's why he had such a tumultuous career with various groups. He's also a heroin addict. I believe he credited Jackson Browne with getting him off heroin. People are amazed he lived 81, but he kept performing. He was one of those guys, like our buddy Andrazik, he's going to be out playing small clubs at the age of 75 or 80 like David Crosby did. Twice inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This is his first hit with the Byrds. He then would go on to join Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And I saw him a couple times in performance. I can't say I ever played with him because that would mean playing with him solo. And I never did that. Never happened. But I do want to tell you, watch Cameron Crowe's Remember My Name. To the real news. And there's a lot of it. All right. The real news. By the way, Remember My Name. It's a vanity. No one's going to remember your name. Nobody. Not even your family. You know who your great-grandfather is? You know who your great-grandmother is? We talk about Winston Churchill in hour number 3 today with Larry Arn. And so people remember Winston Churchill. People remember the great villains of the last century along with the great heroes Churchill and FDR. They do not remember the names of musicians from 80 years ago. They just don't. I mean, you might get one or two people who will call it to mind still of the great days of the jazz bands, and you'll hear their music, but it doesn't happen. Yeah, Remember My Name. Ain't going to happen. Don't count on it, you musicians. Let me talk about what the lead story in the New York Times is today, because it's just sort of extraordinary. Can Trump count on evangelicals in 2024? Some leaders are wavering. This is the early opening salvo about making it a Trump against everyone race. And the former president is the front runner by a significant amount, according to Morning Consult. But nobody knows how these are going to go. Donald Trump has increased his rating quite a lot. It's going to be helped a lot by the Joe Biden double standard on GarageGate. But nobody knows how this is going to go. And the idea that he's either losing or gaining support because some people want to hold their option powder dry is nonsense. Do not. I said in the GOP pod yesterday, Grand Old Pod yesterday, there were like a half dozen articles by lefties about the Republic. Don't believe any of those. They don't know what they're talking about. They don't talk to the right people. They don't know what's going on in the party. Just don't believe them. I want you to hear, though, the president in California yesterday gets a couple of questions about GarageGate, and he is not happy. Cut number 3.
Yeah, what's your question? Okay, look. As we found a handful of documents were filed in the wrong place. We immediately turned them over to the archives of the Justice Department. We're fully cooperating, looking forward to getting this resolved quickly. I think you're going to find there's nothing there. I have no regrets. I'm following what the lawyers have told me they want me to do. It's exactly what we're doing. There's no there there. Thank you.
Now, you know, he read that. In front of, I think, in Capitola, which had very, very bad surf damage in California over the last 3 weeks. He reads it, but the reporter presses on because, of course, that didn't answer any of the questions about which there are 1,000 about these documents, and especially about the double standard. And so he gets asked a follow-up, and then he gets angry, and he does the classic Joe Biden shuffle. Cut number 4.
You know, I will answer the question, but here's the deal. You know, what quite frankly bugs me is that we have a serious problem here we're talking about. We're talking about what's going on, and the American people don't quite understand why you don't ask me questions about that.
The American people don't understand. Do you know where that comes from? That's a Bill Clinton golden oldie. I'm going to get back to doing the job the American people elected me to do. Whenever you hear a president caught up in a scandal, cite the American people, understand they're bleeding out. Tom Cotton was on with Dana Perino yesterday talking about this. Cut number 10.
Well, we should have given Ukraine this kind of intelligence and the weapon systems they need to strike critical.
I meant cut number 11 on Dana Perino.
Those 60% plus of Americans are correct. I think I'd point out the hypocrisy here in Joe Biden and his team's response. They keep saying, oh, this is a legal matter. Go talk to the Department of Justice. Well, the Department of Justice is not supposed to talk to the media, but someone who's being investigated can talk to the media. There's nothing to stop Joe Biden from explaining how those documents got into his home garage or his office, why they weren't secured. And so forth. Of course, he had no problem talking about Donald Trump's classified documents last summer. He saddled up his high horse and rode it hard then. This is all just scandal management and hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm. Bravo, 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 Tom Cotton. Now, I've got to tell you, I woke up this morning at very early, oh, dark 100 in California, and they said, what did you think about what Tucker said about Richard Nixon? Because I ran the Richard Nixon Foundation twice, built the library, knew the President 78 to 80 and worked for him again 89 and 90 and respect him a great deal. So my email, I like 20 emails. What did you think about Tucker? What he said about Nixon? I said, well, you know, I never see Tucker. I'm always asleep or I'm doing the last 30 minutes of show prep. So I never see it. So I asked Dwayne to go and get it. And here's what Tucker said about Nixon last night. You're hearing it for the first time as I am. Cut number 21.
So if you want to understand, if you really want to understand how the American government actually works at the highest levels, and if you want to know why they don't teach history anymore, one thing you should know is that the most popular president in American history was Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon. Yet somehow, without a single vote being cast by a single American voter, Richard Nixon was kicked out of office and replaced by the only unelected president in American history. So we went from the most popular president to a president nobody voted for. Wait a minute, you may ask. Why didn't I know that? Wasn't Richard Nixon a criminal? Wasn't he despised by all decent people? No, he wasn't. In fact, if any president could claim to be the people's choice, it was Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was reelected in 1972 by the largest margin of the popular vote ever recorded before or since. Nixon got 17 million more votes than his opponent. Less than 2 years later, he was gone. He was forced to resign. And in his place, an obedient servant of the federal agencies called Gerald Ford took over the White House. How did that happen? Well, it's a long story, but here are the highlights, and they tell you a lot. Richard Nixon believed that elements in the federal bureaucracy were working to undermine the American system of government and had been doing that for a long time. He often said that. He was absolutely right. On June 23rd, 1972, Nixon met with the then CIA director, Richard Helms, at the White House. During the conversation, which thankfully was tape recorded, Nixon suggested he knew, quote, who shot John, meaning President John F. Kennedy. Nixon further implied that the CIA was directly involved in Kennedy's assassination, which we now know it was. Helms' telling response, total silence. But for Nixon, it didn't matter because it was already over. 4 days before, on June 19th, the Washington Post had published the first of many stories about a break-in at the Watergate office building. Unbeknownst to Nixon and unreported by the Washington Post, four of the five burglars worked for the CIA. The first of many dishonest Watergate stories was written by a 29-year-old Metro reporter called Bob Woodward. Who exactly was Bob Woodward? Well, he wasn't a journalist. Bob Woodward had no background whatsoever in the news business. Instead, Bob Woodward came directly from the classified areas of the federal government. Shortly before Watergate, Woodward was a naval officer at the Pentagon. He had a top secret clearance. He worked regularly with the intel agencies. At times, Woodward was even detailed to the Nixon White House, where he interacted with Richard Nixon's top aides. Soon after leaving the Navy, for reasons that have never been clear, Woodward was hired by the most powerful news outlet in Washington and assigned the biggest story in the country. And just to make it crystal clear what was actually happening, Woodward's main source for his Watergate series was the deputy director of the FBI, Mark Felt. And Mark Felt ran, and we're not making this up, the FBI's COINTELPRO program, which was designed to secretly discredit political actors the federal agencies wanted to destroy, people like Richard Nixon. And at the same time, those same agencies were also working to take down Nixon's elected vice president, Spiro Agnew. In the fall of 1973, Agnew was indicted for tax evasion and forced to resign. His replacement was a colorless congressman from Grand Rapids called Gerald Ford. What was Ford's qualification for the job? Well, he had served on the Warren Commission, which absolved the CIA of responsibility.
All right, I'm running low on time here. I want to thank Tucker for paying attention to some of the stories about Nixon over the years and the relationship with the CIA. And we don't really know what happened with Watergate. We do know that he won the greatest landslide in modern times and was out of office 20 months later. And we do know that Tucker talking about it got a lot of people to write me emails overnight. And I did now have heard it. Thank you for calling it to my attention. I'll be back with more news right after this. Don't go anywhere. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Welcome back, America. Playing all of David Crosby bumps this morning in honor of the guitarist who's gone the way of all human things. The Supreme Court announced yesterday afternoon it cannot identify the leaker of the Dobbs opinion, which reversed Roe and Casey, saying that while investigators and the court IT experts cannot rule out a hack, the evidence to date reveals no suggestion of improper access from the outside. The marshal of the court said 80 people had access to the draft opinion. 97 people were interviewed. That would include, I guess, the justices, some more than once. But she concluded, based on a preponderance of the evidence standard, it was impossible to identify the leaker. The question, obviously, and I hope justices get it, is if who do you think did it? Just tell us if you think it was a clerk or a justice. I think it's a clerk, obviously. I think it's a very smart clerk. I think it's a cowardly lying clerk. And I think we'll get a book from the clerk in about 10 years when they want to write, make a cash, you know, cash in their chips. But what they are doing, of course, is putting a smear on every other clerk. Four clerks per justice. Maybe the chief gets five. I don't know. So you had 36 people who left under a cloud and one coward who wanted to try and upset an opinion gets away with it. And they don't get away with it. They end up tainting all 36. And it's just a disgusting, disgusting thing. Alec Baldwin is going to be charged with involuntary manslaughter in the Rust shooting. I don't know New Mexico law well enough to tell you what this means. It just means negligence that results in the death of an individual. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I saw some high-fiving. I don't like Alec Baldwin, but you don't want anyone to be charged with involuntary manslaughter. You don't want anyone shot on the set of a movie theater. I don't get that. I did a column in the Washington Post yesterday on the Fairfax County and now increasingly all throughout Northern Virginia scandal where national merit awards were suppressed by now 17 high schools. Thousands of comments, and for the first time ever online, I've got lefties saying absolutely right, because it's a civil rights violation under 42 U.S.C. 1983 to violate someone's civil rights under color of state law. If race, big if race played a role in that, for example, we can't put the national merit semifinalist awards out because that influences college applications and it will get more of our high school students accepted to the best colleges than it will the Anglo or the Black or the Latino students. If that is a motive anywhere, and there is some evidence to suggest it is, that is a constitutional violation under Section 1983, and everybody in those school districts who had something to do with it should be sued by name individually and not indemnified. It's my own take. Then there's this story. GOP in talks with networks about debates, and even CNN is included. Look, do not judge the eventual debate package, which comes out in July, or I mean, they begin in July, maybe in June, maybe in August, but probably July, probably in Milwaukee. Ronna McDaniel, who's going to be reelected the RNC chairwoman next week, told me that on the last time she was on the show. And she's got David Bossie and herself working on this thing, and they're going to get it right. CNN is not going, if they're CNN gets a debate, they're not going to run it like they did the four that I was a member of, where, you know, I sat in the corner and got my three questions. And then they ran the whole deal. And they ran the whole deal at first to pump up Trump. And then they ran the whole deal at the end to kill Trump. And it didn't work because Trump was better than they are. But the deal is that, and I love the way that this was put, David Bossie's goal. Our goal is to have incredibly successful debates that allow Republican primary voters to see, without any kind of bias, a full picture of what these candidates stand for. He also said, there are plenty of Republicans who consume their news just from the major networks, which is why they're dealing with them. But they are fighting for fairness. We demand fair and unbiased moderators and questioners. We are fighting for that fairness. Our goal is to have a debate without anybody ever remembering who a moderator is or if there was a moderator. Bravo. I did five debates in the last cycle. Matt Dolan is running for senator again, was a participant in one. And I had a rule set that had to be obliged to be adopted in Arizona, where I did the Senate and the governor's race, in California, the recall debate, in Minnesota, the governor's race, in Ohio, the Senate race, that a rule set that made it absolutely impossible for the moderator. In my case, it was me. And I was, for example, Aaron Baer was my colleague in Ohio, and different colleagues in different places. And the rule set was, no one ever talked about us afterwards. If you limit the questions to 30 seconds, and you ask what Republican primary voters want to hear about, you know, there's a division on how much aid you go to Ukraine. There's a division on abortion. There's a lot of divisions in the Republican Party that ought to be asked, but they shouldn't be asked in a hostile fashion. And we shouldn't spend half a debate talking about climate change and framing everything so it's a negative way. It's very easy to do. And you just go to the networks and say, you can broadcast it. You may have one panelist, the moderator is going to be, you know, Hugh Hewitt, or the moderator is going to be Mary Catherine Hamm, or the moderator is going to be Brett Baer or Guy Benson or somebody who's fair. And you can have one questioner, but if they ask one liberal question, the moderator will cut them off. That's the way to do it. Sonny Bunch is next. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. We are stars. We are guests. We are big. We've got to get ourselves back to the start, and I am doing that with Sonny Bunch. Good morning, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Sonny Bunch, the official movie critic of The Hugh Hewitt Show. You can find his podcast at Across the Movie Aisle and at Bulwark Goes to the Movie. Follow him at Twitter, at Sonny Bunch. And Sonny, I went to my local multiplex yesterday, looking forward to the weekend, and discovered a lineup of movies that reads this way, Missing, The Time I Got Reincarnated, House Party Plane, Megan with a 3, A Man Called Otto, which I've seen, Alice Darling, Broker, Babylon, which only plays at 9 p.m., which is a clue, Women Talking, Puss in Boots, Avatar, The Way of Water, The Whale, and Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. The only movie I might want to see called Living, at least I'm told by the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt, is available at 2 theaters. Why is there a desert? Avatar's been out for like a year.
Well, it's January. This is the month that is fondly referred to as the month of endless trash by the YouTube bloggers, Red Letter Media. And it is, you know, it is always kind of a dead time at the theaters. You have your kind of smattering of award season pictures, and then you have the stuff that gets dumped because they're not sure what else to do with it. I will say that I quite enjoyed the movie Plane, which is one of those that you in that lineup of films. It stars Gerard Butler, who is king of the dirtbag B movie
absolutely
action picture, yes, type thing. You know, and the name is kind of amusing enough to get people into theaters, I think. Just Plane. It's Plane. Not Snakes on a Plane, not, you know, anything like that, just Plane. But I, like I said, I enjoy that movie because I like Gerard Butler.
Yep.
You know, he's the, as I say, the king of the kind of low budget, high concept action movie. He stars in that film as, Captain Brody Torrance, the captain of the plane, who has to, get his crew and passengers to safety after they crash on an island infested with militias and criminals and, I don't know, gangs.
Well, that's a new twist on an old plot line. I mean, going back to Airplane and every plane movie since, including, you know, Air Force One, and they're all snakes on a plane. They're always small. So that's a twist. That's different. That means Plane meets Lost, right?
Plane meets Lost, kind of. I mean, it's the most predictable generic movie that you have ever seen. There's nothing in this movie that counts as a surprise. I mean, as folks will know from the trailers, if they've seen it, Mike Coulter plays a criminal who is being transported on the airplane. You know, he's a murderer. He's being extradited back to the United States, or maybe to France. I can't remember. And he, they, you know, he's just part of the crew. And when the plane crashes, you know, the question is, oh, well, is he going to be a bad guy? Is he going to try and run for it? Or is he going to be a murderer with a heart of gold and help them escape the, evil militia that has captured all of the passengers? And if you can't figure out,
I can't
exactly
figure
that.
So I have a question, Sonny. We came this close. I mean, this close to going to see The Whale, because on Thursday night, the objective for me is to stay up as late as possible to try and transition to a weekend schedule. But I looked at it and I said, I think Sonny likes this, but I think it's going to depress me. I don't need a depressing movie on Thursday night. Am I right?
Well, it is The Whale. So The Whale stars Brendan Fraser as a very large man. The titular whale, kind of. Really, the titular whale is the whale from Moby Dick, which, for reasons, you know, the film kind of gets into. But he plays a 650-pound shut-in who is essentially trying to kill himself with food because he, you know, has tired of living. And the whole point of the film is that, you know, humanity is so decent that they don't want to. Even the people around him who are not terribly nice and you know have kind of given up themselves in various ways will pull it together long enough to try and help him, you know, pull out of his funk. To describe it as depressing is not wrong exactly. It is not a feel good movie. This is directed by Darren Aronofsky, who is the guy who made Requiem for a Dream, Black Swan. Noah, and other movies in that vein. This movie's caused a lot of controversy. A lot of people, you know, say it's fat phobic. People are too mean to the main character. He is too disgusting and too slovenly to be, a representative of fat America. And that is just it's the most blinkered possible way of looking at this film, which, again, is about, a decent man who has kind of given up trying to figure out what is good and best in life. To describe it as depressing is not wrong.
How about sad? Is it a sad movie? That's what I meant.
It is a movie with moments of sadness. I'll put it that way.
I mean, will it increase people's?
Intended as a sad movie, I don't think. I think it is intended as more of a, you know, look at the innate decency of humanity sort of.
Well, that's it. Will it increase the compassion that the ordinary viewer has for people that might be morbidly obese as they wait in line at the airport and they worry about who they're going to sit next to on the plane?
Well, no, you would never want to sit next to. The whale from The Whale, that would be miserable. But luckily he never leaves his house, so it's not really a problem. I give that movie a very soft recommend. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I don't think it's, you know, Brendan Fraser's probably going to win a best actor trophy for it because everyone is loving the Brendan Fraser Renaissance. Everyone likes to see him back in movies and stuff. He'd been away for a while. So, you know, if you want to see the movie that will win Best Actor at the Oscars, that's as good a reason as any to go see it.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, Mr. Bunch. Next week, maybe we can talk about Living, and maybe Living will have actually gotten a release that I can go out and see. Did you ever see, by the way, Cameron Crowe's Remember My Name about David Crosby?
No, I meant to. Was it good?
It's very good because it's poignant that he's a troubadour and he keeps working. I imagine he played a concert before he slipped into a coma. He was just an old broken down rock and roller talking about how he survived heroin, getting thrown out of every band and Jackson Browne picking him up from the vomit encrusted floor. It's Cameron Crowe. He knows music.
Yeah. It was sad to see that David Crosby had died. Crosby still is an Ash good fan.
Yeah, and it's a fine movie if you're looking for something this weekend. Sonny Bunch, thank you. Follow him at Sonny Bunch on Twitter. Across the Movie Aisle is one of his two podcasts. The other is The Bulwark Goes to the Movie. Both of those very worth listening if you love movies and getting deep in. Let me go back to a couple more headlines. Ron DeSantis is pushing education in Florida much further to the right, according to Philip Bump in the Washington Post. I do not agree with that. I think Ron DeSantis is doing the right thing in Florida, which is to make parents in charge. There is some controversy over an alleged action banning African-American history courses as being contrary to state law. I haven't read into that. I don't know that yet. African-American AP courses are offered everywhere, so I don't really know what that's about. So I have to look into that. If it's teaching African-American history to the exclusion of American history, I would have a problem with that. But I often wonder, why don't they just teach African-American history part of American history and teach American history for 2 years so we don't have a historically illiterate cohort coming up? Because American history is kind of interesting. It's why we are in the 13th week in the third hour today of the history of the English-speaking people, which is broader than American history, but which consumes and includes all of American history. It's fascinating stuff. And it can be made to be interesting. Great history teachers are great history teachers. They tell stories. That's what Ken Burns used to say. There's a story in history. You've just got to focus on the story.
Look, you did the tough thing during COVID. You paid your people and pulled your business through the pandemic, or really the lockdown. And now doing the tough thing could qualify you for up to $26,000 per employee at COVIDtaxrelief.org. Government funds are available to reward companies with two or more employees who stayed open during COVID. This is not a loan, and you don't have to pay it back. The program is complicated, but nobody knows more about it than the CPAs and tax experts at COVIDtaxrelief.org. You pay nothing up front. They do all the work and share a percentage of the cash they get you. Businesses of all types, including nonprofits and churches, can qualify, including those who took PPP loans, even if you had increases in sales. You did the tough thing for your employees during COVID. Let COVIDtaxrelief.org help you get up to $26,000 per employee. Visit COVIDtaxrelief.org. That's COVIDtaxrelief.org.
Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt. David Crosby's gone to the Angels, but not his music. We'll play that always. Joined now by State Senator Matt Dolan. Senator Dolan hails from Ohio, and he ran for the United States Senate in 2022 in the GOP primary, came up runner-up to J.D. Vance, immediately threw in with J.D. Vance, helped J.D. Vance get elected, and now he's already declared he's going to run against Sherrod Brown, who's been a thorn in my side for a long time. Matt Dolan, welcome back to the program, Senator. Good to have you.
Thanks, Hugh. Thanks for having me on.
Have you declared officially?
I have. I declared this week, and your setup was right. As we got J.D. Vance into the Senate, hoping that he would be serving in a majority. But the rest of the nation, when the Republicans put up candidates that looked to the past, we lost our opportunity to take the majority in the Senate, and that's a problem. And so now to get it, we got to beat the likes of Sherrod Brown, and that's why I'm in, to state my case, to show that I'm somebody who can actually get something done. I have conservative results, and Sherrod Brown wants to take our state and our country to the left. And we only have to look at his own words for that to prove to be true.
I think we will come back to Sheridan and the left in a moment. First, we got to do the obligatory. What do you think of Jim Schwartz as the new defensive coordinator of the Browns?
So I think I'm excited about it because Jim Schwartz's success has always been when he's been a defensive coordinator.
Yep.
So I think that's what the Browns need. I mean, I want to see the Browns playing in January like the Bengals have been playing in January the last 2 years.
Yeah, there's never been a playoff game at First Energy. I just remind people, we've never hosted a playoff game at First Energy. However, as part of the Dolan family that owns the Guardians, I do want to compliment you on bringing in Josh Bell. You can give your regards to your brother, who does, I think, more day-to-day management than you do. But that's a big deal. The Guards are in. Pitchers and catchers report on February 17th. Can you find a way to have a campaign event in Arizona?
I mean, this is the time of year where you get excited about it. This year we get real baseball right away. We get the World Baseball Classic. So not only will we have spring training games going on, but we'll have those games going on. So we're gonna get baseball going up real quick here.
Now let's get back to the campaign.
Josh Bell is gonna be a nice sign.
Oh my gosh, it's gonna be great. Someone who can hit for power in the middle of the lineup. Senator, would you give people your brief bio on how you ended up being one of the key players in the Ohio State Senate and why you want to be the senator from Ohio in the United States Senate?
Sure, thank you. Well, most importantly, I'm happily married to Jessica, and we have Sam and Maddox as our kids. But I've been a lawyer for 32 years. Family's been involved in many businesses. Obviously, one is the Guardians, which I do not have a day-to-day responsibility for, but other businesses I did. And I have the public servant bug. So I've served in the Ohio House for 5 years and then went back to the private sector. And now I'm serving 6 years, my sixth year in the Ohio Senate. But in each of those service times, I've been named the finance chair for Ohio, both in the House and the Senate, which is responsible for the fiscal policy of the state. And I'm proud to say that in my time, we've lowered taxes, we've reduced regulations, we've expanded school choice. We've been able to protect our natural resources, all doing with a balanced budget. And that's the sort of discipline that I want to bring to Washington. We need to get back to fiscal policy that, you know, funds government to the level it needs to be funded, but most importantly, returns money back to the individual. And let's not go from debt crisis to debt crisis. Let's actually get fiscal policy in place that runs the government, doesn't put us on the brink of bankruptcy or default, and we get things done. We had a chance to do that. If we had the majority in the Senate, I'm confident we would put something on the governor or the president's desk that would be fiscal discipline. We lost the Senate. We got to get it back.
Matt Dolan, I want to pause there. A lot of the networks are negotiating with the RNC to run debates in the 2024 presidential campaign. I said earlier today, unless they cover this debt limit story fairly, I would not give them a debate. The president told the Hill, and he's told everyone, he's not going to negotiate with the Republicans over raising the debt limit of $31 trillion. We went from a $6 trillion debt limit, less than that, actually, in the year 2000 to $31 trillion. The interest rate on it is staggering. As the finance guy in Ohio, can you imagine what 1/50th or 1/20th of the national debt on Ohioans would mean? It would be a shipwreck. What do you think the Republicans ought to say to the president when he says, I'm not going to negotiate with you on the debt limit?
Well, I mean, that can't be the final answer. What I'm hoping is going to happen, and I think it's going to happen in the Republican-led House, is they're actually going to have hearings, they're going to have a process, and they're going to put a bill together that would demonstrate how we're going to stop the spending of money. And so it's not President Biden just saying, I'm not negotiating over the debt crisis because we can't throw it in default. It's saying, no, Mr. President, here is the fiscal policy of the United States of America that's going to get our budget under control and our spending under control. That's what needs to be done. And when we don't provide an alternative, and it's just whether we're going to default or we're not going to default, what happens the last 24 hours in the middle of the night, they strike some deal and it gets extended and whatever deal we cut is meaningless in terms of the overall spending of our country. So this is our opportunity to put forth to the president a budget. You know, you ask what would it be like in Ohio? Well, we have to do that. You know, we have to balance our budget. Now we can ultimately get there in the federal government, but let's put a spending budget in place. So that's what we're talking about. So America gets to see, wait a second, that makes sense, Mr. President. Why aren't we controlling our spending? If we have to increase debt, our debt limit every single time, that means obviously we're spending more than our credit card is able to afford. Let's curb it back. We got to give alternatives.
And I would love to see a network put you and Sherrod Brown. You're the declared candidate. There is no other declared candidate yet. The debt limit debate is right now. I would like to see Sherrod Brown opposite of Matt Dolan talking about the debt limit in a way that would frame the 2024 race in a very, very informative fashion. I doubt we'll see that. I wouldn't give any debates to any network that doesn't do something like that. Senator Dolan, let's talk about debates. The RNC is on the front page of the New York Times. I moderated a debate in which the six Republicans sat down, you among them, J.D. among them. I thought it was very productive. It was not crazy. There were 1,500 people there. It was very effective. You went on and you debated again and again and again. What's your position on if and when other people jump in the race against you for the Senate nomination? Will you sit down with them and do it again like you did in 24, in 22?
Yeah, I mean, every campaign is different. So, yeah, I mean, I'm always looking to have a meaningful, substantive conversation with the voters of Ohio. When and how and where all that will happen, you know, we'll have plenty of time for that. But my job right now is to make sure people understand, as Republicans, that we've got to get the majority back. And to do that, you have to beat Sherrod Brown. And to beat Sherrod Brown, you better put somebody up on the Republican side like me, who's looking to the future and not running a campaign of grievances, who has a conservative record of results that I can compare to Sherrod Brown's record of a liberal agenda, and he wants to push us more to the left.
I mean, and yeah, there's no better place to talk about the future than schools. And Sherrod Brown is a tool of the school teachers unions. There is a scandal in my home state now, Virginia. I'm originally from Ohio, but in Northern Virginia right now, we've discovered that the public school bureaucracy have been hiding test results from excellent students. In Florida, Governor DeSantis is fighting over education. Doug Ducey has left the Arizona governorship with the greatest school choice bill in America, fashioned off the West Virginia and the Florida programs. It's going to be adopted by Iowa this year. What's your position on the backpack bill, which I think is coming down the pike in Ohio?
Well, backpack bill, just for your audience, means providing more school choice for Ohioans. And that's what I believe in. The mechanics of the backpack bill may not be ready, but the idea that in Ohio, we want to give every child the ability to choose their path for education, their family's choice, you know, that's where we need to go. I mean, public, we're going to fund public schools, but they better get their act together. They better start focusing on math, you know, reading, science, you know, the basics of education to prepare our kids for tomorrow's economy. This social agenda that's creeping its way into the public schools is going to be the destruction of the public schools. So, you know, they're only adding to their own demise.
Now, Senator, when you say the mechanics aren't ready, what do you mean? Because I'm very sensitive to delay. Every year that school choice expansion is delayed is another year of lost students. So I think it's urgent that we get this done.
And so do I. What we're doing, when we dramatically expanded school choice last time, the backpack bill is basically saying we're going to provide money to every single student, and then they choose where they want to go.
Right. That's the Arizona model. Yeah.
Right. You know, fiscally, you know, we have to make, how does that match up with the spending we're going to do for public schools? Are we going to have a corresponding dollar for dollar discount? You know, and I'm just speaking reality here, Hugh. That's not going to happen. You know, when the legislators see that their local public school is going to get significantly less money, you know, there's going to be, whether it's public or private, there's going to be people coming to my office saying, we can't do that. We can't do that. But what we can do is recognize where where we can incrementally expand choice so that we are providing the opportunity initially for a number of folks. One is those students, irrespective of income, who are in failing school districts, that those children don't have to be held hostage by that. They can go to a different school. They have the opportunity to go. The second is we don't want somebody who's making school choices because of their income decision. So we want people to have the ability to choose that financially they can't make a choice. We want to help them.
You know, Senator, in Arizona, it's $6,000.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
In Arizona, it's $6,000 follows the student. That's not near what they pay a student to go to a public school, but it's enough to get a kid into a Catholic school, for example. And you know the value of that. They're just some parents who cannot afford $6,000 a year. I don't think it should be hard to get at least a minimum grant for every student who wants it through in that range. You get the last minute, Senator.
Well, but the point is that if we don't get Republicans in Washington, we're not going to have the flexibility and the creativity and the willpower to do what states are doing. So if we keep sending Sherrod Brown back to Washington, we're going to have same bureaucracy. So what I'm saying is, we'll work it out in Ohio, but I want to go to the United States Senate to bring that same ability and creativity in solving problems that we are doing here in Ohio.
Keep coming back. Keep spreading the word. And once debates start, if they start, call me up. I'll come anytime, anywhere to moderate a Matt Dolan and somebody else debate, because it's important that Ohio go red in 2024. So important. Thank you, Senator. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I'll be right back. Welcome back, America. Sarah Westwood covers everything in Washington for the Washington Examiner. I would not be surprised to see her on the stage for the 2024 Republican presidential debate, sort of the front page story in the New York Times, because she's fair. She is one of the few people who covered the Right to Life march this year. Good morning, Sarah. Will you be out on the street today seeing what's going on with the 49th annual Right to Life march?
Good morning. I will not, but some of my colleagues will be covering it today. So it's a very exciting day in Washington, a lot going on.
I liked your piece on the divisions within the pro-life movement, which I think was subtle and nuanced and well done. Two questions I want to get to. First of all, the Secret Service logs, the story that you ran yesterday. I did not know that those existed until I read your story. I thought they were saying they didn't exist. Would you explain to people why the Secret Service logs may be the key to GarageGate and the seriousness of it?
Sure. So one of the top questions that House Republicans have is who had access to the classified information that was stored at the Wilmington House? And the White House maintains a visitor's log for who goes to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, but they've told reporters that they keep no logs of who visits, goes in and out of the Wilmington House. So House Republicans are sort of turning their attention now to the Secret Service, which has to vet anyone that comes in close proximity with the president. They have to perform a background check. You know, it really depends on the nature of the meeting. So they might be incomplete visitor's logs, but they do have a record generally of who's come in and out of the Wilmington House. And they've also indicated that they might be willing to work with Congress if they send a subpoena. So that will be potentially one avenue for Republicans to get around some of the stonewalling we're likely to see from the Justice Department and the National Archives.
You know, Sarah, I have not heard anyone yet ask the question about the McLean House that the Bidens rented from 2017 to 2020. And where was it packed up? Where did its contents go? Has the president or anybody said they all went to the White House? They all went to the... Because the Secret Service didn't protect Wilmington and Bethesda until he got elected president. That's just that there are 4 years there where anybody can come into the garage who wants to take a look at the Camaro or whatever, the Corvette that he drives, right?
Right. There's a lot of questions about that. You know, how many times were the records that were found in the garage in Wilmington moved, you know, before they were finally discovered through this whole process? So obviously, you know, they might not have taken a straight line from the vice president's office right to Wilmington. There's a number of other places they could have gone beforehand. Same with the records that are still at the Penn Biden Center. And the clearing process for that office never even finished. It was sort of frozen in time because of that discovery of the documents. You know, no one said, have they gone back to the Penn Biden Center and continued searching those closets and those desks at that office? So there's a lot of additional places where classified documents could be, and a lot of unanswered questions about how thorough these searches have been.
Sarah Westwood, there is a story in The Hill today that the president's not going to negotiate with the Republicans over the debt limit. That's an early declaration of chicken. We're going to play a game of chicken. Are the Republicans, do they have their act together to announce their demands and to make sure that the American people know they're not unreasonable?
Yeah, that's the thing that the Democrats, I think, don't realize that they're doing. They're giving Republicans time to get their act together and to settle on a sort of consensus. Because right now there is not, you know, one set of demands from Republicans. You have some, like Congressman Andy Biggs, who says he's not going to vote for the debt to raise the debt ceiling under any circumstances. Kip Roy wants to cap fiscal year 2024 spending levels at fiscal year 2022 spending levels, which seems like a direction that the Republicans might take. But you even have, you know, swing district moderates like Brian Fitzpatrick in Pennsylvania say that no negotiating is not an option. There will be some negotiating about some sort of spending cuts, whether that's a balanced budget act, you know, whether that's cuts in non-defense areas to spending, you know, that's unclear. But the Democrats are giving Republicans the time they need by refusing to send someone to negotiate. But Republicans are united on one key thing, which is that they are going to force negotiations to happen.
And they've got to get that out there. And the Hill has done the first piece I've seen yet. Now, let me ask about the Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party Chairman Gallagher and on the weaponization of the government committee led by Congressman Jordan. Have any other announcements come yet? I can't find them, but you'll know them first if they have.
You know, announcements in terms of
who's on it.
Not really. You know, those committees haven't really gotten underway yet. I think, you know, what an investigation that might have reasonably come into the weaponization of government's purview is being conducted under the larger judiciary about how the Justice Department handled the Biden document case. So far, they haven't really gotten going, but you know, it's early days. We could see some action soon.
You know, it's been 2 weeks, and the speaker's got to get moving on this, particularly China and the Intel committee flip-flop. So I think it's going to go to a plus two Republican. Do we know who got added to Intel yet? Was that announced?
I don't think so, but they are starting to fill out some of the subcommittees. You know, we know that there are some Freedom Caucus members on the Oversight Committee now, for example, Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, people who would be, you know, more aggressive in doing the congressional investigations than before when you saw that committee made up of more moderates. So we are starting to see what kind of deals were cut by McCarthy to get this speakership based on the makeup of some of these, what you'd call A committees.
The A committees in terms of visibility are China and weaponization, and we haven't seen that yet. So I'll be watching Sarah Westwood's byline. Follow her on Twitter at Sarah C. Westwood. Sarah, thank you for joining me. It wouldn't be Friday without seeing your smiling face. Don't go anywhere, America. The Hillsdale Dialogue is next. All Hillsdale Dialogues are found at iTunes. If you just go to iTunes Hillsdale Dialogues, there are like 480 of them. But the newest one, the last one on Winston Churchill's History of English-Speaking People, straight ahead with Dr. Larry Arnn, hillsdale.edu. Stay tuned.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.